From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The Southern Nevada rancher Cliven Bundy did a lot of interviews with cable news as his standoff with the federal government was playing out last spring. And in almost all of them, he kept referring to the county sheriff, in this case, the Clark County Sheriff, as being the only legitimate authority he would submit to. Now, it's hard to say if Mr. Bundy knows this, but this idea of the county sheriff being the supreme authority is actually a remnant of a right-wing political philosophy that emerged in the years after the Civil War. It was a way of challenging federal power. Today in the program, we're talking to Mr. Bundy about his ideas of sovereignty and public land and how those ideas are informed by his faith. Over the weekend, he mentioned that God had inspired his struggle. We'll talk about it after the news.
Hi, this is Benjamin Bombard, one of the producers of Radio West. Our online audio and podcasts are made possible by KUER and its listeners. If you like Radio West, help us make it happen. You can donate $10 right now by texting KUER to 85944. That's KUER to 85944. And thanks.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Well, you've heard the story by now. Last April, a standoff played out in Bunkerville, Nevada, on the ranch, or near the ranch anyway, of Cliven Bundy. Mr. Bundy said the federal government had no right, no constitutional right, to ask for grazing fees that had accumulated over the years. This was hundreds of thousands of dollars the Bureau of Land Management said Mr. Bundy owed, and they confiscated about 400 of his cattle until he paid that debt. As you know, hundreds of supporters came to support Cliven Bundy, some of them armed, and you've no doubt seen those images as the tension ratcheted up. Eventually, the BLM backed down. They said they were concerned about safety. They returned Bundy's cows. And the issue seems to be in limbo right now, but Cliven Bundy continues to stand firm. Over the weekend, he mentioned to a group in St. George the religious motives behind his standoff, how God had instructed him to tell county and state officials to, quote, disarm federal officials or risk a civil war. Today in the program, we're talking with Mr. Bundy about his ideas of sovereignty and how his faith may be informing all of this. Cliven Bundy is joining us today by phone from his ranch there in Bunkerville, Nevada. And Mr. Bundy, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's exciting to talk to your audience, and I'm always happy to talk to American people.
I wanted to ask you, how are you, before we sort of jump into all of this, how are you describing the situation right now? I said it was kind of in limbo. How are you describing to people what's going on right now?
Well, I think it's, you're right, it's limbo in one sense. It's freedom and liberty here on my ranch. We've gained access to our land, and we're not restricted of our First Amendment rights, and I'm back operating my ranch, trying to produce edible commodity off of a renewable resource off this desert land. And so in those senses, things are back to normal. The limbo is, well, what is the federal government going to do? What is your sheriff going to do? The question here is, who is the trespasser? Who's guilty of crime? Those kind of things are just really in limbo.
Yeah.
I mean, who is the trespasser? Who is guilty? And, of course, you know, I go back to our Constitution and state laws for my backing, yeah. And I don't know why they get theirs.
Mr. Bundy, you've said that there are different parts to this story. You said there's the physical part, there's the legal part, there's the political part. But over the weekend, you talked about there being a spiritual part, I guess a religious component. Now, I understand that it's difficult for you, and you've said this, it's difficult for you to talk about religion to people who might not understand. You know, throw pearls before swine is how you put it, a reference from the Bible. But I'm hoping you'll be willing to help us kind of understand where you're coming from on a sort of a religious or spiritual basis. Are you willing to talk a bit about that?
Well, you know, sure I am. It's, you know, it's just I don't want to be thought of as a cult. You know, my ranch and friends, I don't want them to feel that be expressed as a cult. I don't claim I have. I've never been set apart for this calling, and I don't claim to be a prophet. And yet, you know, I do believe in prayer, and I do believe in personal revelation, I guess. And and I have conducted my life with, you know, trying to seek guidance from my Heavenly Father. And so, yes, that's the spiritual part of this life and this world. And even this battle is very important to me and very sacred. That's the reason I'm a little skeptic to just casting my pearls before the swine. And I don't want to say, hey, everybody in this world is swine. But I do recognize those that are, that would really like to destroy me in some way, and yeah. So I do recognize that.
You've told this story before, and I wanted to ask you about it. The morning of this standoff, when it happened in April, you've said you had a kind of spiritual experience, a kind of a moment of inspiration where you said that, and I'm not sure exactly how this played out, you said where God came to you, I guess, in a sort of personal revelation way, if I understand this right. And basically, you say, directed your actions on that day. Would you tell that story?
Yeah, but let me give you a little bit of background. Of course, I'm saying that I do believe in God, and I believe that in prayer. And, I make the statement that, and I don't only make this, I mean, this is a statement that's made that our Constitution is a sacred document. Mm-hmm. It was, it was a divine document. And then, people say, well, how do you know that it's that type of a document? And, my answer to them is I know that those founding fathers, they got on their knees and they asked their Heavenly Father for guidance and direction. And when they went to those conventions to create our Constitution, that inspiration went with those men, and we did come up with a divine constitution, a supreme law of the land, a constitution better and greater than any other constitution probably ever in the world, but surely anybody better than anywhere on the earth today. And that is our guidance for this country and this government and we the people.
Well, wasn't
now, that,
the but,
I believe was divine. And it was inspired.
Right. Let me just stop you there.
The morning of this.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Conference, when we have the standoff, of course, I get on my knees and I have some inspiration. I was a little surprised by the inspiration, tell you the truth, and I didn't really quite understand why that would be the. But what he asked is that we basically tear down these. Entrance to these national parks because they were restricting we the people from exercising our right to this, these public lands. And you got to remember the people that were after me was the Park Service and the BLM. And so, that made a little sense. But then the other thing was said the sheriff should, this talking about Clark County Sheriff Gillespie, should take away, it said disarm. Disarm the bureaucracy.
Wait, who said? You're saying God said this?
I said that was my inspiration.
Right, right. So essentially, God told you to ask the sheriff to disarm the bureaucracy, and the idea that God wanted you to get things back in order, to straighten things back out.
Well, that was his sort of his direction to me. He said, that was the solution to the problem of the day. For as I knew, that's what he, I felt like that I should, and I felt like I wasn't, I didn't really feel like I was representing Clive and Bundy. I didn't really feel like I was representing God. I felt like I was really representing we the people, and I presented it in that way to we the people. Ask Sheriff Gillespie to disarm the bureaucracy. And you got to remember who the bureaucracy at that time was. They were like 200 armed agency up there been harassing this valley and this area for about 3 weeks. And here they are up there lined up, ready to do whatever they're going to do. And the solution to the and the simple thing would have been for the sheriff to even weeks before to say no to this bureaucracy, but he did not say no. And even up to that point, this was Saturday morning at on April the 12th, the sheriff never said no to the United States bureaucracy, the federal agents, and never told them no. And so I was inspired to tell him, hey, we the people want those guns taken away.
How does
disarm the bureaucracy.
Right. So you're saying that God believes it may be necessary. One of the things that you said was that God told you that if the sheriffs don't take away the arms from the federal government, if they don't go and disarm them, then you will have to face these arms or face the federal government in what you call a civil war. And I wanted you to explain what you mean. Are you saying that God believes it may be necessary for this country to have a civil war to get things back in a proper order?
No, let's back up and put this in order. Remember, I made this statement, and in the name of we the people, that the Sheriff Gillespie would take these arms away from these agents. These agents were probably about 3 miles away from us, and they was, you know, had military full, garb and high-powered guns. And at this point, I didn't intend that the people would actually go against them, but we knew these people were there. We asked the sheriff to disarm them, and we actually sort of made a demand that he disarm them, and we gave him an hour to do it. Well, he did not do none of these things, and so when the people, we gave him an hour, and he didn't do anything, and the people was nervous about what are we going to do, and they kept asking me, what time is it? And so I gave him another 15 minutes, an hour and 15 minutes, and then and another thing that was happening, we had sent a media out to respond whether he was taking these guns away, and I would guess that there was between 20 and 30 media was there with cameras, and when we made this demand on the sheriff to take these arms away, we also made a demand on the media to go make a count and report back to us. And remember what we're doing. We're standing on I'm on a stage, my wife and I, and there's several hundred people out standing in front of this stage, in the open stage, underneath flagpoles, and we are asking now for a media to report back to us what's happening. Well, after about an hour and 20 minutes, the people said, hey, they're wanting to do something. Let's go do something. And so they start saying, I sort of asked them what they wanted to do, and they said, let's go get the cattle. And remember, cattle really hadn't even been talked about. It's always been freedom and liberty up to this point. And now they said, let's get the cattle. And so I said, "There's a job to be done. Go get her done." And when I said that, they all took off and they headed for up underneath the freeway bridge, about 3 miles away from where I was at. And when they got there, this is what's sort of interesting. When they got up under the bridge area, what did they meet? They met about 200 United States agents with their guns and their army. But they also met our Sheriff Gillespie Metro's SWAT team, and I don't know how many they were, but, 20, 30 SWAT team members. And guess who they was protecting? They wasn't protecting we the people. They was protecting the federal government agency.
Right.
So they had their guns pointed at we the people.
Right. So when you say...
There's another government agency there also. The state of Nevada. Who was they? They had their highway patrol and their SWAT team. They was lined up with their guns pointed at we the people. Now, we the people had quite a job to get done. We had three different agencies that was supposed to be protecting our life, liberty, and property. They had no constitutional jurisdiction to point the guns at we the people. They were supposed to be protecting we the people.
Right. Let me ask you about.
And he wasn't. And this was a standoff.
Right. Let me ask.
That's the way it come down. Now, my wife and I wasn't there. We wasn't personal witnesses this, But there are lots of films and a lot of testimony of what happened.
No, I know. And I don't want to actually relive that moment because I want to sort of move us a little bit forward. Let me ask you something. You have said that, and you say it a lot, you've said it several times here already, that that only the county sheriff has jurisdiction here over you. Now, are you familiar with the so-called posse comitatus movement? That is a movement, a political philosophy that says the supreme authority in the United States, in this country, really resides with a county sheriff. Are you familiar with that?
I understand the supremacy clause of the Constitution, but let me go back to your question a minute ago.
Yeah.
You know, you're saying that I basically had revelation or commandment from God to take the guns away, and then I told you what happened on the standoff day. Well, you know, the next day, the day after the standoff, I also get on my knees and I pray and I ask for guidance. I want to know what we needed to do for that day. And that's when I get the impression. Every county sheriff across this nation, and I think there's like 3,100 of them, needs to take that same demand that we put on Sheriff Gillespie. And take the guns away from the bureaucracies of the United States. We know who the bureaucracies are. You know, they're BLM, Forest Service, Park Service, FBI, Homeland Security, on and on and on. You know, there's hundreds of these ABC agencies, and they all have guns, and they all have their army, even your school district, school people.
I understand that. But I guess what I'm saying is, so where did this idea come from that it should be the county sheriffs, these county authorities who should be directing
them? Well, that's basically constitutional. Closest government to people. I can go through that real fast, the proper form of government. I love to do that if you would like me to go through that.
Well, here's my question. Do this. It's a movement that has origins in a law that was designed to drive the federal government out of the South in the years after the Civil War. This idea that posse comitatus, that it paved the way for a lot of sort of Jim Crow laws in the South. And I'm wondering if it worries you that the movement you're talking about the county, a county has supreme control, has a kind of dicey past, a kind of dicey racist past.
Well, you know, I don't know. I just really don't even know your term there, so I can't comment on it. But I do understand the concept of revolution at the time of the Revolutionary War, when we had a central government that was overbearing and similar to the government we have now. But at our revolutionary time, our founding, our pioneer people, our we the people, you know, we fought a very strong central government. It was English, British war, strongest army on earth. And we beat that battle. And when we beat that battle and we whipped that war, when we whipped England, we received our individual sovereignty. And those people that fought that battle was not going to give that sovereignty up. That was this big struggle in the Constitution and even in the Civil War. That was a struggle. I understand that. But what we received there was we received sovereignty. We the people received our sovereignty.
Right.
We the people created states. Or we created our constitution. We created states. And those states had boundaries around them and sovereignty. And that means they owned that land within that boundary. And they had the sovereignty to make rules and regulations. Also, that Constitution gave us equal representation in the United States government, where we were represented equal to the original 13 states. But also, that those subdivisions, those sovereign states now, divided into counties. And those counties were subdivisions of that state. And there, this is interesting when you stop and think about it, there we the people are the sovereign. And what do we the people do? We elect our county sheriffs. Or no, let's scoot back up. We elect our county commissioners.
Right.
And we elect our county sheriff. And we give our county sheriff a little of our sovereignty to protect our life, liberty, and property.
But they're the only ones who should
pay him.
Right, but they're the only ones that should have the sovereignty is the county sheriff. Is that essentially what you're saying?
Well, let me go on here a little bit more.
Well, hold on. No, don't go on, because I think I understand it. And just answer this question. Do you think, I mean, this idea of the county sheriff being the one, the sort of supreme rule, is this part of a political movement that you read about and that you have adopted as a sort of a political philosophy, or just something that you believe? I mean, are you part of the...
No, it's constitutional. I say the county sheriff is the only man with constitutional jurisdiction, authority, policing power, and arresting power in the county. And I also go a little further. I said he has more, say, arresting power in Clark County, that's where I live, than the president of the United States has.
Right.
He has more power in that county for his arresting and dealing with we the people and the properties and rights here than the president of the United States and the president of the United States Army. He has more power.
Okay.
Now, why does he get that power? Because it comes from the sovereign people of that county.
Right. I think
they're the ones that chose him. They're the one that elects him. They're the one that pays him.
Got it.
Now, show me anybody else in this government across the United States that they have this type of authority from we the people.
Well, you vote for the president.
Yeah, but I don't give him authority to arrest me here in Clark County.
Okay, so let me ask you this. There's a question that actually came from a listener, which I think is a good one, that gets us sort of back to how your faith, your Mormon faith, informs all of these ideas. And this question is, how does your recent statements about how God had instructed you to tell the sheriffs to disarm enforcement agents, how does that square with what Mormons call their articles of faith, the 12th article of faith, which says, we believe in being subject to kings, presidents, rulers, and, oh, there's a rooster, and magistrates, and obeying, honoring, and sustaining the law. Shouldn't you follow the example?
Okay, I think you misquoted that.
Okay.
It don't say and. It says that when we believe the 12th article of faith, that we are to be
subject to kings and presidents and rulers and magistrates.
Kings and presidents and rulers,
yeah.
as they honor the Constitution. And if they don't honor the Constitution, we don't have no obligation to them. Only as they honor those principles of protecting liberty and freedom of the individual, then we honor them, and we honor their government, and we honor that type of thing. It don't say that we honor them and their laws. It don't say and. It says as they stand for these principles, we will stand with them. It don't say that we're going to stand with them and all the laws that's been made.
But here's the question that the caller asks. Shouldn't you follow the example of Joseph Smith, who submitted himself to jailers even when he believed he was innocent? He also talks about Jesus Christ's example of submitting himself to earthly authorities.
Well, I've always said I'll submit myself to a county sheriff. Nobody ever said it would. I wouldn't. I said I wasn't going to be submitted to a foreign government, but I never have denied if a county sheriff wants to come and put me in jail, I wouldn't object to that. But he needs to have a warrant. And they need to have, some just reason. I don't resist that.
Yeah. I wonder if you've talked about that God has told you that your purpose is to get this thing straightened up. But you said earlier you didn't think you had been called to it.
Said God told me to straighten it up. I said that each day as I go on in life, I try to take the best direction I can. I have no idea what God wants done, but he did inspire me to say to have the sheriffs across the United States take away these weapons, disarm these bureaucracies. And he also gave me a little bit of inspiration on what would happen if they didn't do that. And that's what you're getting at. What the inspiration was is, hey, if we don't solve this problem this way, then we're going to face these same guns in a civil war. We the people against we the people. And he said, you know, he sort of indicated that this was my feeling. It was indicated this was our chance, America, to straighten this problems up.
You think?
And if we don't do it, you know, I can't help it. I just felt like that's what I needed to say, and I said it.
Do you regret, Mr. Bundy? I mean, there were some images that came from that standoff, and you mentioned that, yes, there were federal officials who had weapons, but there were also people who supported you who came with weapons as well. One man, there's an image I'm sure you've seen, in a prone position aiming a rifle or what may have been a semi-automatic weapon at federal officials. That disturbed a lot of people. And I'm wondering if you regret that it got to that point.
Well, I can tell you one thing, and I've told the media, and I said, if you can find one person that was pointing a gun at a federal agency or a county sheriff or a state police, you can show me that man, I'll identify him. And you know how many they've brought forth? They bring forth that one picture. You don't know where he's pointing his gun. And that's the only one out of hundreds of people there. That's the only one that they can come up with. And so the media has made a great big deal out of this. Now, let me tell you about militia. I didn't ask militia to come, and I never told militia what to do. And I did not know militia was even on the scene at that standoff. And when, so I didn't know that there was even a man armed even close to that to help we the people. But I'll tell you one thing. Those people that come as militia come to help we the people. And I was definitely happy and glad when I seen that photo that that man was in a position that could have saved lots of lives. Because those agencies was there for weeks with their guns pointing at us. And they intend on killing us. They tell us right on the microphone, right while they was there, that, hey, if you move forward, we're going to shoot. We have orders to shoot. And we had one man that was up there on that freeway with could have possibly saved lives. And you guys want to complain about it, but I won't stand for that. That man was protecting we the people. It was the only man that in the whole picture, the whole show, that showed that we had any protection at all. The rest of those people were all down there with their faith and their belief in liberty and freedom and trusting in their Heavenly Father. And that's the way it was. And you can see all the pictures, talk to all the testimony, and I'm telling you, that's the way it is. And I wasn't there, but that's what I could see.
I wonder...
But it was all said and done. That's what I could see. And that's what you can see.
I wonder if you're seeing what you're seeing in terms of the role of the federal government. Earlier this year, President Obama established a national monument in New Mexico. In last month, some U.S. senators asked the president to create a new monument in southern Utah, in San Juan and Grand counties here in Utah. And I'm wondering, that's about 1.8 million acres of land. I'm wondering what you're thinking about those kinds of things.
Well, I'm asking you, if you show me where in our Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land, you show me one indication that the United States government could do something like that, like create a monument. You know, it's very outlined in our United States Constitution, the supreme law of the land, inspired document, that the United States can only own limited property, mainly outlined in Article 1, 8, and 17 of the Constitution. Also, it talks about other lands that they could have in Article 3 or 4 and 3, which would have been lands of territory. Not one other word has ever been said in our Constitution given the federal government any type of ownership of any type of property except those that are listed in the Constitution. Very limited amount of land. And they had to actually purchase that from the states and for certain purposes only. Now, you guys are talking about parks and recreation areas and wildernesses and reserves and monuments. That isn't constitutional. That has nothing to do with our Constitution. It has nothing to do with state sovereignty. Them are all non-constitutional acts.
I want to, as a question that comes from a caller in Las Vegas, not far from you now. Have you heard from your bishop or your stake president? I mean, are you getting in trouble from your church about this, any of this action?
Well, why should I? I guess I go to church quite regularly, and I have had a couple of discussions with my bishop, and I've never had any problem with my bishop.
He never said, "Hey, Cliven, you may not like the law, but this is the law. You've got to obey the law. It's one of the things we do as Mormons."
Okay, now what law am I supposed to obey? The
being subject
law
to
the land, the state of Nevada law, or am I supposed to obey some code from the United States bureaucracy? What laws am I supposed to obey? If I've broke some laws, why don't they come and arrest me? Why haven't they arrested me in the last 20 years if I broke breaking laws? And why, if I'm breaking laws, why would the several hundred, maybe thousands of people felt inspiration to come stand with me? If I am breaking laws of the land, then I would think that the Lord wouldn't be with us, for one thing. I would think they'd go ahead and arrest me maybe years ago for something. Now, you guys want to beat on laws and that I'm a criminal. Well, all I can say is get your job done if I'm a criminal. But if I'm not a criminal, then we better find out who the criminal is. And I think that's what the process is happening in the United States. I think we're finding out who the criminals are, who the trespassers are, who's really pointing the guns at, who's got the guns. There's a lot of questions here that, you know, I think needs to be answered.
Yeah.
I think somebody ought to be held accountable for it.
Right.
And I don't believe it's the President of the United States that needs to be held accountable. I think it comes closer to home. There's certain political people that we elect to protect our life, liberty, and property. And we elect federal officials and to put them in offices to do certain things. We do the same thing with our states, and we do the same thing as our county. But I'll tell you one thing. If Cliven Bundy's going to be mad at somebody for stealing his cattle and abusing his kids and his family and friends and taking away our rights, our First Amendment rights, and hollering about our Second Amendment rights, you know who would have to be accountable? It would have to be the governor of the state of Nevada and the county of sheriff of Clark County.
Yeah.
I couldn't talk. I have no problem with the federal government. I don't even have any problem with all those agencies and guns that was pointing at us. I understand that they're not constitutional. I understand that they must have been breaking some laws. But that's not my concern. My concern is
those the county
that
and the state.
Swore to oath to protect our United States Constitution and the laws of the state of Nevada. Those are the people that need to be held accountable.
Let me ask you this finally. We're essentially out of time, but I wanted to ask you, is there any part of you, Mr. Bundy, that wants to get this thing settled, you know, find a way to maybe pay off the fees or make some sort of arrangement?
No, back. How come I would owe fees? You know, that's another thing. I've never received a bill. I don't run my cattle on federal land.
But you know,
have no contract with the federal government to manage my property or my land or my cattle or any of my operations. I do not have a contract with the United States government. I do not operate on any of their land. Now, they have never given me a bill.
Well, they say you owe almost $1 million. I know you know that.
Tell them to give you a statement. Have you ever asked for a statement? The whole media hollers about me owing $1.2 million, nobody's come up with a bill yet.
You haven't seen a bill from the federal government?
No, I have not seen a bill from the federal government.
Hmm. You're worried.
Everyone in the media wants to holler about that.
Okay.
I don't owe one penny to the federal government. I do not run my cattle on their land, and I have no contract with them.
You don't run cattle on public land that the federal government says it owns?
Public land, no.
You don't run cattle on public land that the federal government claims it owns?
Not that they own. I run cattle within the boundaries of the state of Nevada and within the boundaries of Clark County.
And that's a point you've made clear. Are you at all worried about your ranch? You're not worried about losing the ranch?
Well, I guess I was worried a little bit. I had 200 people with armed guns coming, the army at me. And, you know, I guess you could say the people basically supported me and protected me. And I would have to give the Lord a lot of credit in this. You want to make this religious, I think that he protected me very well.
That's Cliven.
And I give him all the honor and all of the, I didn't do much. He fought this battle for me.
Okay. Cliven Bundy, cattle rancher in southern Nevada, joined us by phone from his ranch there in Bunkerville. Cliven, thanks. I appreciate you being so generous with your time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, we need to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we were just talking with the rancher Cliven Bundy, the rancher at the center of the standoff with the federal government over grazing fees and public land. There was a standoff, of course, that played out in April. I'm sure you've heard that story and you've been listening. If you have, it'd be interesting to see what you think about our conversation with Mr. Bundy, standing firm on this question of his part in this story. 801 for the program is Scott Carrier, an independent writer and radio producer. I've been thinking a little bit about this story. I wanted, Scott, welcome, first of all.
Thanks for inviting me.
Okay, so give me your reaction to that conversation. I mean, I guess we were sort of going around in circles and, the question that comes up is Cliven Bundy aware that he's part of this, posse comitatus political movement? Or is it just these strands of things that, I mean, he keeps squirting back to, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just concerned about the Constitution. I mean, does he seem like a guy that's connected to, a bigger political movement or just someone who has little strands of things that he is, talks about to sort of make his case?
I think he's not alone. I think that there are a lot of people out there who feel like he does. And I think it's actually about half the country. It's not a small number of people. It's a surprisingly large number of people who see themselves and the world in a similar way. And I think that's probably shocking to a lot of listeners. They probably don't agree with that. But that's because I think that our country is divided into two separate cultures and that we don't talk to each other. It cultures in the sense of we have separate cosmologies, which deal with, questions of where we come from, why we're here, and where we're going. One side is based in faith and religion. They believe that God put us here to follow his commandments, that they have a happy life and maybe eternal life. And the other side is based in reason and science. They believe that we evolved from apes. And that separation is profound because we have completely different images of who we are and our relationship to the world around us based on those beliefs. And we have the same language, but the words mean different things. Mm-hmm. And so any conversation other than about the weather can quickly become volatile, even explosive, because we think the words are being used wrong and it just upsets us and we get really emotional. And so the result is that we don't talk to each other.
Yeah.
We don't usually, people mainly, I think most public radio listeners and listeners of your show are on the side of reason and science. I think that's the way it breaks down. And we don't hear people like Cliven Bundy speak very much. But I've driven around a lot interviewing people at random, and I know that when you look at the voting results of the polls, it's about 50-50.
So you think a lot of people are raising questions about whether or not we should have given Mr. Bundy a platform. What you're saying is, what's wrong with hearing him talk about where he's coming from, I guess? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think we do need to listen to Cliven Bundy and try to listen to him without getting emotional, although it's hard for me. I mean, I was really kind of swarmed with emotions listening to him. But if we don't try to understand each other, then we have no hope of solving big problems. I mean, the one thing that the two sides agree on, it seems to me, is that this is the end of civilization or something's coming to an end.
Yeah.
And yet we have completely different reasons for why that's happening. And was the apocalypse or was the climate change? but it makes us, it renders us helpless to actually deal with it at all. And so I think, yeah, there is an argument for listening and trying to understand, but it's a very profound gap, and I don't know what the solution is. The one thing he was saying, I mean, that I think we need to think about is he kept going back to the Constitution.
Yeah.
Right? He and people on that side of the culture gap have a different reading of the Constitution that basically comes from the idea that it's an inspired document.
Right.
He said it was an inspired document.
Numerous times.
Meaning that basically the Constitution was inspired by Jesus or God. The members of the Mormon Church believe that Joseph Smith said that Jesus guided the hands of the Founding Fathers in writing the Constitution. That's quite a bit different than what non-religious scientific-based people would believe, and that's a lot of the problem. I mean, Cliven Bundy is a member of the LDS Church. Members of the LDS Church believe that God gave this land to them, and that makes a huge difference in the way they see their relationship to the land around them and the way we see our other people see that relationship.
Let's go to the phones. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us. Gerald is with us in Salt Lake. Gerald, hi.
Hey, I was just concerned. You know, we have a president of the United States that is a constitutional law professor. I think it's just a little bit weird that we give a platform to people like Bundy. I think it's very controversial. You know, he's not a constitutional lawyer. He's just some guy, you know, out in the middle of the desert. And so, who's popping off about the constitutional and snubbing his nose at the law? And I just think it's a little weird that you're giving him a platform.
We shouldn't hear from someone like Cliven Bundy then.
Okay.
Now that's my question. So we shouldn't hear from someone like Cliven Bundy?
I don't think you should be giving him a platform on the radio.
Why?
I just see him as a lawbreaker and somebody who's, you know, snubbing his nose at the federal government. And I think that by giving him a platform, we encourage this kind of behavior.
Yeah, what do you think, Scott? I mean, what's the point?
Yeah, I felt like that at certain points when he was talking. But, again, there are a lot of people who believe what Cliven Bundy believes. There's a lot of people who would say what he says way more than people on the other side know about. And also, there's the question he asked it himself. Why hasn't he been arrested? I mean, really, Tim DeChristopher was arrested pretty quick. They put a lot of Occupy Wall Street people in jail pretty quick and are still prosecuting those guys. Why wasn't Cliven Bundy and the people who down there it looked to me like that guy was pointing guns at somebody down there, and really, why aren't they in jail? I think it's because people who believe in Cliven Bundy and what he's doing, they control the land down there. They live there. The members of the Mormon Church are in the large majority in southern Utah and that part of Nevada, and they support him. They believe the same thing he does, whereas Tim DeChristopher, basically, he had no support. Nobody else was willing to stand up along with Tim and go to jail. The people in the Wall Street protests, they were off their turf in New York City. But the people, Cliven Bundy and people in southern Utah who are going to fight this new monument, I believe, are on their turf. And that gives them a lot of strength to the point where Cliven Bundy's not in jail. And he's, you know, if he goes to jail, we'll see. You know, I was at the Blanding protest where they rode ATVs in to recapture Canyon.
Right.
And the thing that was startling down there, besides just the emotional outpouring, I mean, these people, these protesters are very emotional. They're very committed. They're like pouring out their hearts because they very deeply believe that God gave them this land and that they're going to protect it and they're not going to have it controlled by the federal government. But the thing that was really startling to me is there were sheriffs and deputies there at the protest as 40 or 50 people rode their ATVs into the wash. Sheriffs on horseback and ATVs, over 20, including three deputies with automatic rifles and camouflage. They were there not to stop the people from breaking the law and riding into the wash. They were there to protect them from the federal authorities who may have been there to cause trouble. That was rather a pretty strong sign that who's in control in southern Utah. It's not the federal government.
This idea of county leaders, is that, you've talked about that this is sort of the social structure in a lot of these rural communities in Utah and maybe throughout the country? County leaders?
I think in southern Utah, definitely the county leaders are in control more than the federal representatives of the federal government, from what I've seen. For instance, the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument was created in its bylaws as a park that where science would be conducted. They would study the natural environment. But to this day, I don't believe they'd done an environmental assessment of the land in the monument. It hasn't happened. And it's almost 20 years old. So it's an example.
With us in Price, Utah, Seth, hi.
Hey, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks.
I just want to make a comment that I think that your guest has hit on a lot. A lot of these small towns out here in southern Utah do believe that the federal government is overstepping their bounds, and that we do see Cliven Bundy as a hero, not a lawbreaker. He's the one that's standing up to somebody that's overreaching, taking multiple use rights away from land that we've grown up for generations and generations.
Yeah. Where do you live?
Price,
Utah.
Right. Yeah, I think the Carbon County Sheriff's Department was in Recapture Wash as well. I'm not sure. I know the San Juan, Kane, and Garfield counties were there.
That's right. And I remember reading about the Kane County. There's a road that the BLM continues to close off all access for no purpose or no reason. And the Sheriff's Department in Kane County, or I think it was Kanab, would just take down the signs and continuously, you know, returning them to the BLM office. And it's kind of like, like you're saying, that there is a lot of authority, county authority, sheriffs and such that support this.
Well, how do you feel about it?
I feel like it's sad that I'm in a world where I can't do what my father's and great-grandfather's done. And I have, I have BLM agents with high-powered rifles and Moab office alone has about 30 or 40 BLM trucks that just patrol the land. It's becoming kind of like a police state to control the land, that should be ours, should be public land, and it should have multiple rights uses, not just close down every. I mean, I remember one thing, hiking a lot in the backcountry of Moab, and they started putting up signs to close down washes and put up signs saying close down for restoration. And I don't understand how you can restore a wash. I mean, that's basically just closing off access to areas where you can access it through the wash.
Well, there's a lot sort of encompassed in what you're having to say. And there are obviously different views of roads and all those kinds of things. But I get the point, Seth, and I'm glad you called. Thanks very much.
No problem. Thank you.
Scott, this is what you're talking about. I mean, this is the way people are. Think a lot of people anyway. What you say is maybe even half of the country thinks about these issues.
It's a divide, and I think it's a divide based on between religion and science, basically. That's how I see it. A lot of people don't agree. They don't want to talk about it because they basically don't want to think about the other side. When I talk to religious-based people, they just cancel out the scientist people just straight across the board. It's the same thing the other way around. We don't want to even think about the other side. Because it's not true. It's obviously false. So we're not going to think about anything that's obviously false. We're not going to argue points that are ridiculous. But see, both sides say that. Both sides think that way about the other side. It's ridiculous, so I'm not even going to consider it.
What's it like for federal officials who live in rural Utah?
Good question. Yeah.
They go to school and they go
I
to...
I met a man who worked for the BLM who lives in Escalante, and he started to side with the environmentalists over the beaver, reintroduction of beaver especially. And he has a very hard time actually being around, going to church, being around members of the local community because of his stance on reintroduction of beaver. So I think it is quite hard. I mean, there are employees of BLM, Park Service, Forest Service, who live in rural communities in Utah, and they shop at the same stores. They send their kids to the same schools. They go to the same church on Sunday, some of them. And so they have to live there. And I think it is very hard for them to follow the policies of their agencies in that environment.
Do you think, do you think that we're headed somewhere, like it's, you know, it's like Clive and Bundy seems not remotely interested in backing down and resolving any of these kinds of questions. Are we headed for a kind of moment of violence, do you think? I mean, do you think that's inevitable in something like this?
Sure looks like it to me when the people start pointing guns at each other and talking about God. That gets scary. And
That God's on my side.
God's on my side, yeah, because if God's on your side, you know, all of a sudden you're a holy warrior and stuff happens. So I think with this new monument, that's being talked about at this point. It's going to be interesting, and hopefully, I don't know. I hope nothing like that happens, but everybody's threatening it. I mean, it's like if you threaten to shoot, you know, to go to war with the federal government and you're not in jail, I don't understand that. Tim DeChristopher didn't cost anybody any money. He didn't hurt anybody, and he was immediately, you know, basically put in jail, and it spent 2 years there. So I don't get that part.
Let me ask you this finally. So we've got about a minute left. So you're collecting tape, but is there a story? I mean, have you started to think about, like, what's my story about?
Well, yeah, I'm working on a story. I think maybe it'd be for This American Life. I was talking to him yesterday. Where I've been collecting, I've been asking people, do you think this is the end of the world as we know it? Do you think this is the end of civilization? Because that's the one thing that the two sides seem to agree upon. And so I wanted to see what people think. I think that's a good way to look at this basically theory that we're divided like this. And so that's what I'm doing. And it's been probably the best question I've ever asked people. Everybody has an opinion, and they basically end up talking about themselves, that's a really good question.
So. Yeah.
That should be upcoming in the fall on This American Life.
Good luck. Scott Carey, thanks a lot for being with us.
Right.
Radio West, a production of KUER News, technical direction from Mike Anderson. Michael Shea is our intern. The program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.